Hello and welcome to Teaching English with the British Council Series 2.
A podcast in which we try and provide solutions to some of the key questions being asked by English teachers around the world.
Teaching English with the British Council.
We are your hosts, Wiam Hamdan
and Chris Salton. In each episode, we address one such question and attempt to answer it in two ways.
Teaching English with the British Council.
In the first part of each episode, we hear from a British Council project, programme or publication about something which is being done to address this issue.
Across the 10 episodes of Series 2, we'll hear from teachers, trainers and researchers in a wide range of contexts, including Ukraine, Romania, Egypt and the United Kingdom.
Teaching English with the British Council.
In the second part, a leading English expert and practitioner will provide practical solutions which you can immediately try out wherever you work.
Each episode of Teaching English is accompanied by a full transcript and show notes. These show notes provide additional information, a glossary of keywords, and links to relevant websites.
Teaching English with the British Council.
This is episode 7, how peer-led training and mentoring can support teacher development.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Teaching English with the British Council, in which we look at how peer-led training and mentoring can support teacher development. Well, yeah, what's your interest and knowledge of this particular area?
I worked on Teaching for Success program as a teacher training coordinator, and in the groups we gathered, each group we had teachers with different experiences. Some of them worked for 15 years and some of them are novice teachers. So mentorship was great in terms of bringing together all the experiences and making teachers just more confident with what they have and more open to sharing these ideas with other teachers who might be more experienced, and vice versa as well.
Absolutely. And I think you raise a really interesting point, which is it can be beneficial to the experienced teacher as well as the less experienced teacher. I think sometimes when we talk about these things, it's seen as a sort of one-way street, that it's the experienced trainers or teachers supporting the less experienced, but actually it is very much a two-way process.
Yes, sometimes it's harder to work with experienced teachers, but when experienced teachers see that new teachers are trying out new ideas and trying to cope with the changes, and you know, this age is different and these new teachers are bringing new ideas to the classroom, I think the experienced teachers are more encouraged to try out new things.
Exactly. And in our interview this week, we listened to Eve, Equal Voices in ELT, and we welcome Chris, Charlotte and Maria.
Welcome to the podcast. First of all, can you please tell us about EVE, or Equal Voices in ELT?
Absolutely. I mean, EVE was set up initially to address gender equity issues in the context of international conferences, because so many times when you look at the poster or the banner for an international conference, there were four nice male faces staring at you. And it was set up initially to try to confront that and engage with that. And now it's also become involved with the native speaker, non-native speaker balance, because many of those four male faces looking at you were also male native speakers. So it's about equity in English language teaching, specifically in conferences. The mentoring side works with teacher associations around the world. We reach agreements with teacher associations who have a body of members, some of whom female members would like to be able to speak, if not at international conferences, at larger national or local conferences, and feel they need some support in terms of preparing their presentations, preparing their talk. Those are the mentees, and the mentors tend to be practitioners with a certain amount of experience from the world of English language teaching who've spoken many times themselves at conferences, and they provide online one-to-one mentoring, a series of meetings, rehearsals, and ultimately a very small sort of a mini conference, as it were, at the end for everybody to try a public delivery of what they've done. And before I stop talking, one other news flash is we are on the 27th of May hosting a conference, and which will be open to the public, as it were, where we're going to ask, give the opportunity for our mentees over the last two or three programs to deliver something that they're passionate about to a conference, and we will also have other invited speakers too.
And can I ask, Chris, why did you pivot to the mentoring side of things?
We've always been aware of the gender balance and perhaps been speaking about it or blogging about it or putting stuff on Twitter about it, which is fine. It's awareness raising. But what I like about the mentoring is it actually does something. It's actually saying, right, here's a problem. Let's engage with it. Let's identify 8 or 10 potential speakers and let's work with them and support them so they can go to these conferences. Mentoring works. I think people come out the other end of the process thinking, I can do this.
Yeah, and one of the important things when there's a relationship between a mentor and a mentee is a good rapport between the both of them. So what do you think makes a good mentor-mentee relationship?
It seems to me that mentoring is really a conversation. I mean, that sounds a little bit trite, but it is an exchange. It's very different from training. This is an opportunity for two experienced professionals, and most of our mentees, I'm sure Charlotte would agree, are producing quite a lot of experience under their belt, but maybe they haven't gone into the conference direction for whatever reason. So it's two professionals exchanging ideas frankly and openly. You have sometimes to have quite grown-up conversations with your mentee, but to allow those grown-up conversations to happen, there has to be that rapport, as Wayam says, there has to be that relationship. And I think complete openness at the beginning is very important. One of my mentees, she was very concerned about the level of her English. We had a grown-up conversation. I said, yeah, maybe your English may not be at quite the level of other people's. That's fine. That doesn't mean you can't do a workshop or presentation, whatever she wanted to do at a conference. That's fine. So it's creating that safe space, I suppose.
You know, to develop that relationship can be maybe slightly difficult because it's done 99% of the time online. Do you think sort of the impact of COVID and all the pivot and the shift to more digital forms of communication has helped Eve in promoting the mentoring program?
I think it probably has, because Eve is about egalitarianism, it's about democracy, it's about access. And that's one gift, I suppose, we've had from COVID. In an odd way, it's almost easier to create a rapport online. I don't think it's a challenge, and I think it's actually made life a lot easier in some ways in terms of accessibility, and that's what Eve's about. It's about equal access and equal opportunity.
Brilliant. And just one final question, sort of practical question, really. If we have listeners from all different groups and organisations, how can they get involved in Eve? If they're a teacher association or an experienced teacher or teacher trainer or a less experienced person who wants to be mentored, what are the next steps that they can do?
Well, if they're an existing teacher association, they can contact Eve through the website. If a teacher wants to get involved as a mentee, they should go to the teacher association in their country, encourage them to contact us. If a practitioner wishes to become a mentor, we are delighted to have new mentors. It's a great process. And if you've got a little bit of spare time and it's really not massively time consuming and you've got a fairly good internet connection and you've got some experience as a conference presenter, we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Chris. Now maybe we can move on to Charlotte and Maria, so a mentor and a mentee, and find out, as it were, from the ground what it's like.
My name is Maria. I've been teaching English as a foreign language for almost 20 years now. I currently work at the state secondary school, and also I teach educational management to postgraduate students.
Similar to Maria, actually, I've been teaching English for about 20 years. I've worked in a private language academy. I've also taught secondary here in Spain, and I've done a bit of teacher training. So I was thrilled to get involved with the mentoring scheme, because although I presented at sort of local level and national level, I remember feeling absolutely petrified the first time I presented at IATEFL.
Can you tell us how long have you been working together as mentor and mentee, and maybe a little bit about the process?
Sure. I think we worked together over about a 3-month period, but we worked quite intensively. We emailed quite a bit in addition to meeting together.
We met once a week on Zoom, besides emails. Of course, I worked on my presentation, and Charlotte was gradually checking how I progressed. She gave me useful advice how to improve the presentation process, and that's how it functioned.
So I guess quite a lot of it is what happens between the Zoom sessions.
Well, absolutely, yes. She gave me clear instructions. I was allowed to select my own topic. And she just gave me advice how to improve my presentation skills.
I mean, it was very obvious to me when we started working together that Mario was incredibly expert in this particular area.
Can I ask, Maria, why in the first place did you feel you wanted a mentor? What was it that sort of led you down that path?
I have been teaching for a long time. I do attend conferences, and sometimes I wish I could speak to those conferences, but what I lacked was courage and confidence.
And can I ask, Maria, how did it go on the day when you gave your presentation?
Well, I definitely was proud of myself. I did spend a lot of time preparing, which is very important for me in my case, because I felt very anxious, I have to admit. But I followed Charlotte's advice, and that's why, in the end, I felt really proud of myself.
And can I ask you, Charlotte, how did you feel as you were watching Maria give her presentation?
Well, I was very proud of her, but I wasn't in the least surprised, because the first day I met her, you could immediately see that this is a very experienced teacher who has a lot to share with her colleagues. And to me, the mentoring relationship, it felt very much like a successful peer collaboration. And we spent quite a lot of time chatting about just what was going on in our classrooms.
From my understanding, a lot of it can be, transforming this passive knowledge maybe into a more practical knowledge or, more hands-on knowledge. So how can we change this perception that the relationship is one way from mentor to mentee?
I really don't think that it's a one-way relationship, because all mentees are different. We have different needs. So I believe that every mentor also learns something from each and every different mentee. For example, in my case, I've already told you that I really have some confidence issues when it comes to giving presentations. And I noticed at the very beginning that Charlotte did not expect that. Of course, eventually she helped me overcome that.
I think what you've identified about wanting to feel more confident about presenting is something that very many teachers will feel. And I think it's very useful to have raised that. And something that also was apparent to me in our conversations, Maria, was a feeling that you're in a network which is supporting you and encouraging you. Because not all teachers have that in their local context. And I think that was a very important part of your preparation. And that's something that Eve absolutely offers, both in the individual mentor experience, but also as an organization, it's incredibly welcoming.
In my local community, it's not very supportive when it comes to English language teachers sharing their knowledge and their skills.
Mm-hmm.
So becoming part of a group of people that support each other to share their knowledge and experience is really important, especially to me.
Yeah. And also going back to Chris's point about accessibility, and also, Chris, what you said about, just the practicalities of making this work. I mean, very many teachers are women. They have families. They may have young children. They might also be caring for an elderly relative. So there were just like the practical points that early on that we had to identify a time of day when Maria could actually have some uninterrupted time to think about, focus on her presentation and how she wanted that to go.
I was also going to ask, are the words themselves slightly problematic of mentor and mentee? In my mind, it's a slightly old-fashioned term, because it does come with it that sort of power imbalance within those words, which isn't evidenced in the relationship between the two of you.
Yes, I mean, I think there's definitely something in that, and to me it felt very much more like working with a colleague.
Before you met Charlotte, did you have that idea of what a mentor looked like, or what that would be? And
well, I was not expecting someone like Charlotte, I have to admit. I was expecting an EOT professional, strict, I have to admit. I don't know, I'm really glad I met Charlotte, because she was really friendly and helpful. And a real friend.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a great pleasure working with Maria.
So we spoke briefly about the importance of rapport, and Chris mentioned that it's more of a conversation. So in your opinion, what are some of the best ways for building this relationship between a mentor and a mentee?
Well, I share Chris's thoughts. I also believe that every solid communication is based on active listening and reasonable and respectful responding. So if the mentor and the mentee are willing to listen to each other and they both engage devotedly to accomplish the mutual goal, I think that everything's going to be perfectly all right.
One final question. I think the answer is quite clear. Whether you'd recommend this program to others?
Absolutely, of course.
But I suppose more specifically is maybe what you would say, Charlotte, to people who are thinking of potentially becoming mentors, what you would say to them, how would you encourage them? And Maria, what you would say to people who are thinking about joining the program as a mentee, if they're slightly worried, if they're sort of slightly nervous about or apprehensive about doing that, what you would say to them?
It's not a hugely onerous time commitment. So it's very, very doable, even if you're working full time, and it's a very, very enjoyable experience in a well-run and very supportive organization.
And yes, I would also definitely recommend this program to everyone, because from my experience, the EVE mentoring team is fully devoted to empowering people, especially women, to make their voice be heard.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Chris, Charlotte and Maria. It's been fascinating to hear you today.
I think mentor-mentee could also work as an approach for teacher training in, let's say, government schemes to train teachers. In my context, I've seen a lot of training happening from top to down. So if this becomes more like an approach for training, I think teachers can, you know, improve their capacities.
I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. I think one of the challenges is that so many government systems are still focused on that top-down initial teacher training and also continual teacher training. It's that relationship. So I think schemes like the EVE scheme and the scheme which we'll listen to in the field report are excellent, but they are still quite on the fringes, I think. They're not mainstream at all. So I'm not sure how we make those sorts of schemes more mainstream.
Yeah, and here they mentioned that the idea started because of gender imbalance, but here it's about females not getting their opportunity. But also in lower context, teaching jobs doesn't pay very well, so it's mostly male teachers not engaging in the teaching process more than female teachers, and I think it's important that we see this gender imbalance differently in different contexts.
Yeah, I think the mentoring approach can really work with all people, but I think especially for people who are from more marginalized groups or who are perhaps not as engaged in what they are doing for a whole variety of different reasons. Often in many contexts around the world, teachers don't get time off for training. They don't get paid for training. They have to do it in their own time, sometimes pay their own travel costs for all those sorts of things. So what mentoring, I think, can offer is a low cost but really effective method of support and development for teachers.
Yeah, and the fact that it uses conversation, exchange, which is different than training, is really great for teachers, and it also teaches them how to have, you know, constructive conversation with other peers, how I can improve my skills by just speaking to other professionals in the field. And sometimes we often forget how to use that in a constructive way rather than just minimizing the efforts maybe of teachers.
Yeah, and I think that approach can also help in the institution of schools themselves. It can create more balanced relationships within schools. It can normalize those sorts of sharing behaviors, and, you know, it might be peer observation within a school. It may be a more democratic way that the school is organized in the staff room, those sorts of things. And I think this kind of training model can certainly help with creating a more positive and democratic school environment as well.
In this case, Maria just wanted to improve her presentation skills, but in other cases it might be other things. And I think each individual is aware of their weaknesses. One great thing also about mentorship is that you choose and you customize your learning. What do you want to improve? And since you know more about yourself than others, then you can choose and then you can build on that.
People are often afraid to really talk about their issues, their challenges, their problems that they have, because they fear they're going to be judged on it by the inspector. And this might link to their career advancement, their levels of pay, their status within the school, all these sorts of things. So I think there's often, they don't feel like very safe spaces, those training zones, I think, for people. But with this approach, people are encouraged to, as you say, Wayne, focus on things they find challenging, focus on the things they know they need to improve. It's a much more honest relationship and it will lead to much better outcomes in the end.
Yeah. And if you want to know more about the mentor-mentee program that Chris mentioned, you can go to evecalendar.wordpress.com.
And he also mentioned about the challenges sometimes faced by non-native teachers of English as well, and we'll be picking that issue up in episode 9.
This field report, Chris actually went to the field.
That's right, yes. So I went to Sibiu in Romania, where I had the pleasure of spending half a day with a brilliant group there who share their ideas about teaching and do peer-led facilitation once a month.
Teaching English with the British Council.
Yeah, but I don't think that if you are extremely proficient, I think it doesn't, yeah, proficient in English, it doesn't make you a good teacher.
No.
My name is Nicolina Reina, so everyone is calling me Nina for short, and I really enjoy this nickname, and I'm an English teacher in Sibiu.
Strategies that maybe can help us teach with limited resources, which is something that we are all very familiar with, right? Especially in context, maybe in rural schools, and try to see how we can get the best out of this.
We feel safe. We don't judge. There are no right or wrong answers. So there is a kind of, it has been developing a friendship between us. Very difficult time, and teachers started to be very interested in how to face some challenges, not only with teaching English, but in cope with daily school life, let's say.
Okay, great. Here, there are the questions about teaching resources. What textbook are you using? Is it a really hot topic about textbooks and resources? What challenges are you experiencing? What is going well? Do you consider yourself to be teaching in a context with limited resources? So discuss in your group, yeah, or about these questions, and then share us some thoughts and ideas. Okay? You have 10 minutes for this task.
So I'm using two textbooks from Litera for 5th and 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I found them really interesting because I really like the popular structure in terms of vocabulary and grammar and also the exercises that we have. We have kind of a lot of exercises to use.
I have two classes, A and B. I cannot use the same materials for both classes. Well, you didn't teach them that that unit from. Yes.
Yes, apparently it's not. No.
But yeah, but she pointed out that I moved over that.
I started my teaching career in 2002, And from the beginning, I gave up to this textbook in school.
Well,
in
I started using the textbook, and I always doing all the exercises. And that was in my second year. Then I stopped. Oh my God, it's not working. It's so boring. No, we are not the only ones, but maybe are
I had a problem with not enough textbooks, I used the solution to form them in groups and to assign them different parts of the lesson.
Did
one
it work?
Of them, yes, had to read, the other one narrating, acting out, writing on the blackboard so they can write it down, and yeah. If I told them exactly from the beginning what to do each of them, each group, of course.
And I'm so glad that the pandemic rules are over and we can pair them and put them into groups.
Bring
and
them close.
They like to work in groups.
Yeah, yeah,
they miss this.
They are motivated.
Hi, my name is Andrea Jugar now. I just got married recently and I teach in a rural school. So I have been a facilitator in this project since 2018. Well, I think this is a good model because it takes place on a horizontal level, not vertical level, because we are all the same. We are not trainers, we are just facilitators, and we talk from our experience and especially from our mistakes, so that maybe other people can learn something from them, and we share experiences and good practices. And I think that the entire atmosphere is really friendly, so that it encourages cooperation. Well, and we have here a community, and I like this a lot.
And number four, I looked up this term in the dictionary.
Students get prompts from the teachers.
Yes, so they need a skeleton on which a pattern or a template on which they build the dialogue. Yeah, so some guidelines. Some lines in a dialogue with blank spaces there so that they can fill them. Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay, and what about six?
Affordances.
What was that? What did you understand from it?
It was all the
affordances. To notice the student's likes. The student's problems.
Yeah, so it's
to
like.
Identify them.
So it's like the next level of emergency.
And we are lucky enough to have colleagues which are really interesting to improve themselves and to change something in their classes, and only they can do that. I can't force them.
And we discuss our problems, our difficulties when teaching something, and we ask ourselves how you dealt with that problem.
Teaching English with the British Council.
I think an increasing number of programs are starting to use mentorship. The great thing about mentorship is that it increases the confidence of teachers, and it has this smooth way of transitioning teachers from the awareness stage of learning more into the integration stage of learning. I think a lot of teachers have the awareness, maybe the understanding sometimes, but they lack the techniques or the skills on how to engage and integrate, and mentorship proves to be great in that regard.
Yeah, and what I saw there is that people were very honest in sharing their thoughts and their views with each other, not just their successes, but also their challenges in terms of implementation as well. And I think that sort of mentoring, support, peer-led model does that. I think one of the participants mentioned that sort of talking about the horizontal relationship that they have in the group rather than a sort of vertical top-down relationship. And I think that's a real key to its success.
Yeah, and I think when you have been teaching for a long time, maybe years, so sometimes it's a bit chaotic, you know, to shake up their beliefs or what they're used to do in the class. And I think mentorship has this very, you know, smooth way of improving their learning.
Definitely, and I think that's one of the things that was mentioned as well there. They said they were facilitators and not trainers, and I think just that choice of language really says a lot about the approach which is used within the sessions as well. It is that we're here to support each other. It's not that I know something and you need to know something, which certainly in a lot of top-down, sometimes government-led training programs, inspectorate-type programs, can feel to be the case. This was very much focused on the developmental aspects of teaching.
Thank you for listening, and in our next episode, we will talk about what is English for specific purposes and how is it different from general English.
Until then,
goodbye.
Teaching English with the British Council Series 2 is hosted by Wiam Hamdan and Chris Souten. The producer is Elizabeth Dyer. Executive producer, Chris Dyer. Salsan Abukara is the Arabic language consultant.
So Chris went to the field and collected this report. Can you... I don't know.
I think do it again, Wiam.
Teaching English with the British Council.